Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson, along with Ryan Dobson and Luann Crane.
Last time on Family Talk, we heard and experienced what it's like for the nearly 130,000 kids who are waiting for their forever family. They are in the U.S. foster care system, and it is unreal what some of these kids go through, and it just breaks my heart.
Well, Ryan, it must break the heart of God, too. Doctor, we have a lot more to learn about our guests today. It's an amazing family who really stepped up to care for some of these kids who are the hardest to reach.
Mm-hmm. I loved this interview.
Yeah,
it
did.
Really got to me. It really touched me. Last time we introduced our listeners to Billy Jack and Ann Barrett. They're local ranchers here in the Colorado Springs area, and they love horses, but they love children even more. Mm-hmm. And over the past 10 years or so, they've adopted 6 children out of the system who were considered unadoptable because of their emotional and psychological issues. And when I recorded this conversation with them, they had 6 children living in their home, 4 of which were adopted. And since then, they adopted 2 more teens, and most of their children are adults now, and they're living productive lives on their own. And I consider that a miracle, how the Lord has worked in this family. It hasn't always been smooth, hadn't always been a problem-free journey, but I shudder to think what these young people might be today if it were not for the love of Jesus Christ as shown through Billy Jack and Ann Barrett.
They're such a great example to all of us, Doctor. We want to get back to this conversation, as you said, but a little bit of setup first. We heard last time about the 2 children who were adopted, Dusty and Daphne, their brother and sister. They were the first ones to be adopted into the Barrett family. Dusty's currently serving his 2nd tour of duty in Iraq. That just blesses me. Daphne is now a wife and mother to a 1-year-old son. Then there was AJ, who was adopted in 2000 at the age of 9. And, Doctor, we're pleased to say that just a few weeks ago, he joined the Army.
And AJ was judged to be the least adoptable child in the state of Colorado. And here he is now going off to serve his country. That does bless me.
It does me too, but it breaks my heart that someone could even use the term unadoptable or least adoptable in the state of Colorado. You know that feeling was shown to him. It had to affect him as he was growing up, and he wasn't even adopted until the age of 9.
It is regrettable, Ryan. A term like that should not be hung around the neck of a child.
That's right.
But you have to understand why it happened, because he was so abused as a child and had such emotional problems associated with what he had been through that it resulted in him not being acceptable to very many people.
And after all that, labeled with unadoptable.
And here he is joining the military.
That's right.
God bless him. That's actually 3 of our 4 Barretts. The next daughter they adopted was Jennifer. She was 13 at the time. And we're going to pick up the conversation right here on this Family Talk broadcast as we hear Ann talk about the circumstances surrounding Jennifer's adoption.
Oh, Jennifer, we met when we did respite for a family that was actually planning on adopting her. And we know it's in God's hands, but this particular adoption fell through and Jennifer was placed back in the system. Jennifer has juvenile diabetes, which she's had since she was 4. She's been in numerous comas, many times should have died, but God has her on his heart and she has a job to do for him. And so when I saw her at her church, I was kind of shocked. There was a lady that brought her that was doing some respite for the foster family that had her. And I said, well, would you please just keep us appraised of what's going on with Jennifer? Well, through this wonderful woman at our church, I was made aware that things didn't look very hopeful because Jennifer was 13 and she had juvenile diabetes. And this are 2 things that are going against a child to be adopted: the age, the fact that she's a female at 13, And then that she does have a serious health condition.
And then you throw in behavior.
Yeah.
She was called oppositionally defiant, which I think is an interesting term because if I was scared, I'd be mad and mean too. I just think it's kids that are scared for the
most
loved, part.
And loved, rejected.
Right. So I wanted to, Bill and I prayed about it and discussed it and said, we need to do this. So I called the Child Placement Agency and went and picked up Jennifer and brought her home. And that was that when we take a child, we don't take them on a trial basis. Yeah. God brings us this child. This is our child. I might not have carried this child in my womb, but I've carried this child in my heart. It's my child. So she was home. But at the time when I brought her home, Bill wasn't quite expecting it.
I bet you weren't. You already had four children, and you've now adopted three.
Yes.
You had seven, and here comes another.
And I was in town at a meeting when I got home, and it was late, but the children always wait for me to come in and tuck them in. And so when I arrived home, and I said, well, I'm going to go up and tuck the children in. And said, wait a minute.
Got a surprise for you.
She said, there is one more child up there. She said, we now have Jennifer. So I went up and included Jennifer and the children when I tucked her in that night.
Jennifer was very fragile. And at 13, it's difficult. The reason that a lot of people don't want to adopt a teenager is because that is when generally they separate from parents. And if a child hasn't bonded, how they have nothing to separate from. So this is a difficult age. But we got Jennifer, and I knew nothing about diabetes. So I was learning along with Bill. And one evening, she hadn't been with us very long. She had a real high. She was up, I think, in the 500s. And I'm thinking, oh, her life is going to end. And I'm calling the diabetes educator. And it was kind of like a yo-yo thing. And Jennifer started crying. And she said, please don't take me to the hospital. And I said, honey, why not? And she said, because if you have to take me to the hospital, you won't want me anymore. I don't want to go to the hospital. And I said, Jennifer, if you go to the hospital, I'm going there and staying with you. And whether or not you have to be there doesn't determine whether or not you're staying here. This is your family. This is home. And she was really frightened. She was shaking all over because she was sure that we'd leave her there and that was it. We wouldn't want her anymore. That's how these children thought. They really believed that it was something in them.
Well, that's what they'd experienced.
And one of the things when I would work with people interested in adopting children, would tell them that when Jesus was on his way to the cross, he suffered humiliation, he suffered rejection, he suffered physical pain and torture. But we don't read about him crying out ever until he was on the cross and he suffered abandonment from his father. Uh-huh. That's the worst. And we knew, too, that these children coming to us, most likely, we knew they had suffered neglect because the state doesn't step in unless there's neglect. And in the process of neglect, there's generally abuse because when a child is being neglected, most of the parents are abusing alcohol and drugs. The child is going to be subjected to physical abuse and sexual abuse. So children in the foster care system, you can pretty much bet for the most part, have suffered all of that. And these were no different. So bringing them into our family was truly an act of faith and trusting in God, but also being aware of the problems that were going on, having a very, very close relationship with our child psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. Very important to have a professional so that we could keep the birth children safe and we could heal the adopted children.
Billy Jack, children are notorious for resenting each other and fighting with each other and competing with each other over absolutely everything. And here you have biological children being mixed in with previously adopted children with a newly adopted child. That everybody would tell you that won't work. I mean, that can't happen. But it did, and they didn't tear each other to shreds. That is a testament to them, but to you.
Well, and I think it's a testament to God's grace.
You're doing a lot of praying in those days?
I do. I've learned to really do a lot of praying with these children. And, you know, with Dusty and all of these children, it's a learning experience for us. But at one point, Dusty just was emphatic that he was going to go back. He didn't like being told no. And so I sat Dusty down and I explained to Dusty that at my age, I hadn't gone looking for children to adopt, that it was God's plan and that God would see us through it. And I didn't care if I made Dusty mad. I did not want to make God mad, and I wanted to fulfill what God had called us to do.
And I think you made out of good stuff, man.
I think it was about the time that Dusty started realizing that this was going to be his home for better or for worse, and that he had seen the last of any institution.
Jennifer, I understand, threw a fit at SeaWorld.
You know, these are such opportunities. You can always look at stuff that comes along. Is it an obstacle or is it an opportunity? And I must be the ultimate optimist because I see it all as opportunities. We had gone to SeaWorld in California, and she had actually been through a tremendous amount, just newly moved into our house and our family and going to California, meeting family members. And she'd done really well. We got to SeaWorld, and by the time we got to the beluga whale exhibit, it was rather late. And Jennifer was acting a little surly, and I told her to come stand by me. And she said, no. Well, with these children, I love to hear them tell me no. It's when they're wanting me to say, yes, you will, and show them that there are boundaries. So she said no, and I'm looking at this wonderful little petite child thinking, boy, does she have courage and strength to tell me no. And I scoop her up in my arms and hold her, and she starts screaming and screaming. And we're in this small enclosed area with 30 people coming out of the simulator. And these ladies are going past saying, oh, poor dear. Oh, we're so sorry she got so scared by the ride. And I held her for about half an hour as she screamed. And when she, and I wasn't going to let go. And she finally started crying. And when she cried, she sobbed from down deep and put her arms around me and clung. And when she did that, I knew she was ours. We had to get through that. You know, you're not going to embarrass me in public. I'm not going to let go. You're not going to make me run. So we kid her to this day that she turned the beluga whales white.
I can't believe these people. You all are, I know you don't want to be lauded, but my hat is off to you. I tell you, this is incredible to hear your story. Billy Jack?
One of the things that Ann and I learned from training the horse is that you go along for a while each day trying to make a little progress, and then there'll come a time where that horse quits resisting and starts going forward. And that's something that was in Jennifer's case. That's where she quit resisting and started going forward.
All right, let's get into the horse therapy now. How have you used horses, and how have they benefited the children?
When I would first go down to the institution and check Dusty out for the day, fortunately, I'm blessed with a good place to work where I manage the equestrian center at the academy.
Air Force Academy.
At the Air Force Academy. Yes. And I could take Dusty with me, and we'd go out to check fence. So when he was 9 years old, I would put him on a horse, and we would go out trail riding. And it was interesting to me to watch the confidence that these children can accomplish in a quick time when you put them on the back of a 1,200-pound horse. It really boosts their confidence that they're somebody. And these children are thinking they're nobody because nobody wants them. But then all of a sudden, they start becoming somebody in their own mind.
Tell me if this is true about horses. It's what I've observed, but you are the expert. They are very tender toward the wounded,
absolutely.
Especially other horses. Is that accurate? Does that happen?
That's correct. One of the things that we've done in living out where we do is that we pasture breed our horses. We run a stallion out with a group of mares, and the children get to see the way that that stallion is the protector of his family. The mares and the foals will be in a little band, and the stallion will stand off to the side to watch for coyotes or mountain lions or whatever. And so with our children, we take each opportunity to talk to them and explain to them what is going on so that even in God's plan, the wildlife have their order. And it's a response. We would show the children what the brood mare is doing, caring for their babies.
I think in addition to that, too, when the kids first come, they know they're always being judged. they know people look at them and they feel different. So they are sure, even if somebody doesn't look at them as if they're different, they feel that that's what's happening. And with the animals, whether it's with the horses or their guinea pigs or anything else, they know that that animal comes up if they start feeding it and develops an attachment, and the animal doesn't care if they haven't brushed their teeth or if they've just failed a math test. It's, I think, the closest to unconditional love that they can recognize.
I want to do something that we haven't done before, at least I don't remember doing it, but Scott Welch has gotten very much involved with this family in telling me some of the details and preparing me for today. Scott, you didn't know that this is the way you're going to spend this day, did you?
No, I hadn't planned on this.
You went out to the ranch.
Absolutely.
We're going to talk a little bit about the house that they have, because that's a very interesting story. What did you see out there? Is this propaganda, or do these people really love kids?
Well, actually, that's what impressed me so much about them was the joy and the love in this home and the connection that they have. If you didn't know this story, Dr. Dobson, if I didn't know this story, listening today, you would not believe that these six kids that are in their home now, all teenagers, by the way, six teenagers, haven't been together their whole lives. They love each other, and they have a great time. It's a blast to watch.
And they love the Lord, don't they?
They absolutely
do.
They
have taught them. By the way, I haven't mentioned this since the beginning of the first program, but Ann, you homeschool that crowd, too.
Yes, I do.
That is unbelievable.
It's a blessing. I thought I'd never do it. In fact, I said once I would never have kids as I got into the horse thing, and I said I'd never homeschool, and it's the most awesome job. I love it.
You're making every woman in America feel guilty right now.
Well, you know what? I think that women have got such a blessed place behind Adam, and yet the heart of the family with the awesome job of raising up the members of the body of Christ. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why adoption is so vital, especially these older kids, because they're not being taught the promise, and they're not being taught the love of Christ, and they're not being taught their the awesomeness of God and His love for them.
Well, I think a very important part of your success in doing this is the isolation of those kids at the ranch with you, not being corrupted by the culture that's out there. You know, when you came up to my office and brought several of the kids with you, I mean, I just loved them, absolutely loved them.
They're a lot of fun.
Yeah, and Scott, you're the one that interviewed them. You and Stan interviewed them, right?
Right. We went out for the better portion of the day and didn't know we were going to spend that much time there. And, you know, Ann gave us permission to talk to the kids and speak with them upstairs while she was getting lunch ready and staying out of the way. You know, after having done that, I was amazed because we had been told in advance that some of these children will have difficulty sharing part of their stories. And we were aware of that, wanted to honor and respect their past, their difficult childhoods. And, you know, as we got into the interviews and began to ask them some questions about their lives, the kids opened up and blossomed. And we heard some of that yesterday on the program.
But you have another 1 minute clip, as I understand it, which I haven't heard.
That's right. Now, you need to know that going into this, Doctor, some of these kids are very shy. One of them was Daphne. AJ's not shy. He's very gregarious. But as we prepared to ask them another question about painting a word picture, what's it like to be awaiting adoption and then to be adopted in a family like the Barretts? The most beautiful descriptions. And they were recorded separately, so one didn't hear the other, the other's comment about that. And here's what we got.
The darkness is like a dark room or something. And they blindfold you and they spin you around and then they just stick you someplace and you don't know where you're at or anything. And it's a very dark room. And you have to learn how to survive and find your way around without hitting the walls.
Before I met the Barretts and before I had a home, it's like I was in a dark room. And you're with other people that don't know God, and they're in the same dark room as you, but really you're just trying to figure out how you can get out of that dark room, and you have no idea how to do it because you're just a kid that doesn't know anything. And then all of a sudden someone walks in the room that you don't know, but that person's light, and that's the only light in the room. it's really weird because you're used to dark and all of a sudden light's there. So you're kind of intimidated by it. And then the next thing you know, you're going with that person out of the room into this whole beautiful world where it's light and there is light.
That is incredibly expressive. How does that make you? Had you heard that before?
Never.
No, we hadn't heard that.
Tell me how you feel as you listen to it now.
Very touched. That's powerful.
Yeah. And that reaches to the depths of the soul, doesn't it?
It's the light of God.
Yeah. Can't take any credit for it.
Not at
it's
all.
It's pointing them to the cross.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows you how powerful he is, that he can take me or Ann and do something with us.
Something is an understatement. There's so much that we want to say, and we're almost out of time. But you've got to tell us now about Extreme Makeover, the ABC television program that chooses a family and comes in and redoes their decorations in their home.
They just rebuild a complete
home.
Yeah,
in your case, they raised it to the ground and built you a ranch home.
Yes.
And a barn, I think, didn't they?
A schoolhouse.
Schoolhouse.
Our very own Little Red Schoolhouse.
And that was on television.
Yes.
But I'm going to interrupt you because I want to say the but. I want to say what I heard when you were in my office. Your kids said, we like the old house. I mean, the new one's fine, but we like the old one. And you were jammed, absolutely jammed into this aging ranch house.
We had eight people living in a 1,400-square-foot, 101-year-old ranch house.
And the kids were satisfied with it.
Because they have a family. They have their soul. They're getting nurtured physically. They're getting nurtured emotionally. And they're getting nurtured spiritually. And that's all part of what a family does for
one another.
Can
I come out and live with you, too?
When the producer paid us a visit, he asked the children, he said, now, you're just in the selection process. My being here does not mean you've been selected. If I leave and never come back, how will you handle that? And the kids all laughed and elbowed one another, and they told him, he said, well, we have a family, we have a home, we're happy, we really don't know why you're here.
Is that right? And many of them were sharing the same bedroom or the couch.
Yeah, they were all piled up, you know.
And, you know, through that whole process, the thing that they talk about when they talk about this happening isn't the house. They talk about the people they met. It was the people.
I've got a job for you. I want you to hug every one of those kids. And you tell them that we love them, and you tell them that we're convinced that God has them where they are because he has a job for every one of them to do.
Yes.
And they understand
and,
that.
And they do. And I also ask that our listeners pray for this family and these kids as they get older. There will be other challenges. There'll be other difficulties. There'll be some residual from childhood. That always happens. We never get completely away from the painful moments of our life, but you can overcome it. And they have through your help. And I do thank you for that. Billy Jack, I want to especially thank you as the father of this home. Moms have a tender heart. Dads are there to protect and provide, and yet you opened your heart to these kids. I've got to say, man, our time is gone. I got to say one other thing, and that is to our listeners out there. There are other wounded, hurting children.
Lost and abandoned.
That have been abused in every way.
Yes.
And they're sitting in foster care, and I think nobody will ever care, and maybe no one ever will. And they're praying at night the way Jennifer was praying and the way Daphne was praying and asking somebody to care for them. Now, if maybe the Lord... Sorry. If maybe the Lord puts this on the heart of somebody out there, maybe they can learn from your experience.
Yes.
This really does touch me, and it's been a long time since I've had difficulty getting through a program. I appreciate you all. Love you. Love you for what you're doing in the Lord. Thank you, Scott, for bringing it here and helping with this program.
Thank you for having
Thank you.
Us.
Thank you.
Well, Ryan, I cannot think of too many times on this Family Talk broadcast when your dad has teared up like he did there talking to the Barretts and hearing the love they have for their children, many of whom were adopted from the foster care system.
Well, I think if you're not moved by this broadcast, you might want to figure out why. I mean, this is the heart of the gospel, loving the quote-unquote unloved or the unadoptable, as we've said earlier. If you have been moved by the Barrett story and you want to learn more about orphan care and adoption, visit MyFamilyTalk.com for information on some organizations that can help you get started. Again, it's MyFamilyTalk.com.
Or if you even know of some foster care or adoptive parents who you think would be encouraged by the Barrett story, give us a call for a complimentary CD or two of this program. The number to do that, 877-732-6825.
Or if you don't need a copy of this program, but you want to help us get into the hands of people who do, we would love help in underwriting the costs of doing so. You can call us at 877-732-6825 to donate, and we would really appreciate it.
We'll see you next time.